United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and this week we continue our countdown to this year's Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games in Normandy with a look back at the 1998 Games, which took place in Pratone del Vivaro in Rome. And joining me today to reflect on those games are Abigail Lufkin and Kerry Milliken. And we begin with Abigail, who joins us now from California.
Thanks, Chris. It's nice to be here.
You're no longer in the sport of eventing, although still on the periphery of it, aren't you?
That's right. I'm really fortunate that I do some sport psychology consulting, and I'm really fortunate to have actually a number of event riders as clients, so I get to keep up with it that way.
Well, we're going to take you back down memory lane here today, Abigail, as we reflect on the past World Equestrian Games. We're catching up with some riders who were there and experienced at Games. And, of course, that was 1998 for you in Rome for those World Equestrian Games, where the eventing took place in Pratone del Vivaro. It was hot, but it was gorgeous out there, wasn't it?
It was. That's such a beautiful sight. I had been there to compete a few years before, actually, when my first advanced 3 days was there, so it was lovely to go back, and also I was a little bit familiar with the site, which was great.
And, of course, it's great footing, isn't it? It's all volcanic soil, and it's beautiful footing, beautiful hills there. So you had ridden in the past, and it was familiar to you.
It was a little bit. As I said, it was one of my first, I think it was my second advanced three-star when I did it before the Games at that time. So I was very inexperienced at that stage, but it was nice to come back to a familiar venue. That makes a difference.
Absolutely. Well, as I said, it was warm because it's always warm in Pratone del Vivaro, and you were riding Quest. Let's talk through your performance there in a minute, Abigail, but tell us a little bit about Quest.
Quest is a lovely, lovely horse that Blythe Tate actually found for me in New Zealand. He was a very experienced horse when I bought him and a little bit older. Really one of the nicest cross country horses I'd ever ridden. Really knew his job and loved his job. Difficult on the flat, but a really wonderful, wonderful jumper.
Now, how old was he then when you partnered with him?
Well, that's an interesting question, Chris. I believe when I bought him in 96, I bet he was probably 13 at that point, so he would have been, I guess, 15 at the Games. That's close, if not exactly right.
Right. So what had you done with him then prior to that, and when you got the call-up for the Games, was this something that you think, well, I'm getting close, I'm pretty confident I could get a spot on this Games team?
The horse had gone well. I'd had a lot of trouble with him in the dressage, and he was also a difficult horse to keep sound, I think, because he was older and had some issues. We were all over training in England that summer, and as there's a lot of pressure leading to the final selection. I'm so interested in how they've done it this year, so different with actually choosing the squad ahead of time. To me, that just makes so much sense because everybody sort of knows where they stand a bit more. For 98, it was just a whole bunch of us. I don't remember how many were all competing and competing, and you don't know who's going or who's not going. So it's a pretty fraught situation. So I guess to answer that question, I wasn't at all sure of whether I was going or not, basically.
So when you got the call up, where were you at the time?
We were all training at Soley Farm in England. We were all there, and so we were all together, and it was, I think at that point it was probably fairly expected because you're in training with everybody, you've had the final outings, you know which horses aren't sound, so you kind of have an idea of where you are in the process.
So from England then to Rome, was that a journey you did overland or did you fly there?
I flew myself. I had a wonderful groom, you'll remember her, Liz Cochran, and she drove with the horses, and so I knew he couldn't be in any better hands. He was certainly far more capable than I was, that part of it.
And how did he travel? Because that's quite a distance to get down to the bottom of Italy.
Yeah, it really is a really long trip. He traveled great. He was a good, you know, he was a good traveler, and he arrived there feeling really well and fit and sound and good.
So what were your impressions then of the games from that point of view, from being in Protoni, somewhere that you knew? But, of course, it's different being on a team, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very different being on a team. I think, you know, and that was my, I'd ridden for the Pan Am team before, but I hadn't been on a kind of a world or Olympic team, but that was my first experience. So it was, I mean, it was exciting. I think I had lived in Europe before and competed over there, so I knew a lot of international folks who were there, so that made it nice. But I think it was, I didn't, my memory is I didn't have the best lead up in preparation. Like the horses hadn't gone particularly well. I had Jacob Tutu at that point as well. So I didn't go into that games feeling particularly confident. I mean, I felt confident in my ability to do it, but I didn't feel that I was at the top of my game, I would say.
Now, you going into the dressage then, it was all there in Protoni. You had a grass arena, as I recall, for dressage.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's funny. It really does. I'm probably the worst person to do this interview, Chris, because I don't have a lot of recollection of the dressage. And that may be because on that horse, that was the hardest phase. So perhaps I've just kind of blocked it out. But I remember being very focused kind of on the cross country and different routes and the being able to make the time. That was kind of where my, I think, where my focus was at that point.
Right. So, well, of course, we had the steeplechase then, didn't we? And you picked up a bit of time there, but you jumped clear. And...
Yes, that's right. That's right. I don't know if you remember, but it actually wasn't, but it rained the night before just unbelievably. I remember going to sleep that night just hearing the rain on the hotel rooftop. It just really, really rained. And so even though the volcanic ash is good, it was actually pretty deep on the steeplechase, and I was concerned about running him too fast and having him be tired on the cross country. And again, I think that was probably a lack of experience about how to be light on them, even though it's wet, how to sort of make that go a little better for them. So I did, yeah, I did have some time faults.
Now, what were your impressions when you walked the course, and how many times did you walk it? Who was your chef, and who were you walking with?
Mark Phillips, our chef, and we walked with him. David was there as well, and David had been a longtime coach of mine, so I certainly got input from him. And my impressions were it felt long, but it certainly felt jumpable. As I said, that horse was a wonderful cross-country horse, so I felt very confident in his ability to do it. But it was, you know, it was long and big. And I think there's something about being in an international team championship with everybody there that it sort of adds a level of atmosphere that I hadn't really experienced before. So that was great to experience.
Take us through that course then, and how it rode for you. Did it ride the way it walked?
It did, you know, and what I remember, there was, or if you remember, there was that giant, I don't think it was particularly far into the course, but there was a bounce, and then you dropped down that huge hill. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Like it was,
yes.
Like, yeah. Something. So that was quite intimidating to walk, but jumped very, very well. And, you know, it's interesting, the horse jumped around everything. There was that big, round world. Do you remember? It was sort of like a skinny, narrow at the top of a hill. It was the shape of a round globe.
Right. Yes.
Was the world. And a lot of the horses and riders went around it as the day went on. I went, I guess, fairly early because I jumped it straight, and he was great. So that gave me a lot of confidence. He eventually had, as you probably know, he eventually had a sort of stop run out, which it's very funny. I'm always saying to my clients, as event riders, we're very much perfectionists. You know, we want everything to go well. We don't like it when things don't go well. But I'm always saying we learn so much more from when we make mistakes. And I learned when I walked the course with Mark, I said, he said, you're going to come down here and it's going to be a little tight. You know, so don't press them. It's going to just sit and wait for it. It's going to be a little tight. And I knew Quest, and my feeling had been that I was going to have to land and ride him across the distance because he just could land a little bit short. And I didn't do what I knew to do. I didn't do it, and it was completely my fault. And just he landed short, just as I had anticipated he would. And I think it was a bounce, and he just didn't get across the distance, and so kind of was like on a half stride and sort of stopped and ran out. So completely my fault, and again probably an inexperienced decision on my part, but ultimately taught me so much, which is that, you know, we're so lucky to have the best people helping us, and to take their information in is really, really important. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, you're the one that knows your horse the best, so you have to be confident enough to do your own ride, trust your own instinct.
Absolutely. So how did he pull up?
Very well. He pulled up great. He was definitely fit enough for the, you know, for the pace that I'd ridden him, and was sound the next morning. And show jumped. My memory is show jumped a good ride. I can't remember if he had one down or if he was clean, but
he was clean.
Clean. Yeah, he was a very careful show jumper, that one.
So what memories do you have of that then? Obviously, it went well. You went clear. So nothing too memorable from a negative standpoint then of that final day?
No, I remember it was big. You know, I remember it was big, but it's such a joy to be riding a horse that's careful. I think it just sends you into the show jumping with such a different feeling. And, of course, it wasn't as though he was winning it. So, you know, although I remember very much, I was disappointed in Saturday and disappointed in that mistake that I had made. And so I very much wanted to put in a good performance on Sunday. That was really important to me to close out the weekend that way. So I was happy to be able to do that.
So what were your biggest takeaways from those games then, Abigail?
I mean, really, I have to say the mistake I made was one of my biggest takeaways, that in terms of just a learning experience was very important, I think. It's a sport in which we're coached a lot, which is great. We have excellent coaches, and we're so lucky that way. But I think having that education to trust yourself at the end of the day was a very big deal. And I think it made me also very keen to be a part of a team again. I really liked that experience of representing the U.S. It felt really different and very meaningful, I think. So it really made me keen to be able to do that again and to do a better job, to do a more competitive job, I think.
And what about your experiences of being at Pratoni again and in Italy as part of an American team? Did you take away any souvenirs?
I didn't take away any souvenirs, except for we're so lucky in the U.S. We get so much good, we call it swag, you know, so much good sort of equipment from the U.S. team. So I took away that, but I didn't. I think I ate a lot of pasta. I remember that, and that was great. A lot of carb loading. You would have thought I was running a marathon, not riding a horse. But yeah, and it was wonderful. I mean, I think the Italians are great and friendly and like Americans, and it was in Europe, so things were done in a very similar fashion. There wasn't a lot of differences, and as I said, I'd competed there before, so that was nice to have a place to go back to.
And, of course, the rider that you got the horse from, Blythe Tate, became not only the individual but also the team gold medalist there as well. So it was a memorable games for him. And he had his fingerprints all over your horse.
Absolutely, yeah, he did. And Blythe's a very good friend and was a very good friend at that point. And it was a real pleasure to be there to see him win on Teddy and be able to celebrate with him, even if the games hadn't quite been what I might have hoped for at the outset. It was great to be able to celebrate his victory.
So Quest got home safely, presumably. I mean, that's a long trip home again. How long was he in transit before you did get him back home?
My memory is they went back to England and stayed there for maybe a week or so and then flew back to the U.S. after that. So it was a long time.
And what did he do after that, Abigail?
That was 98. I tried to take him to badminton, I think, the next spring. And he just was a really wide oxer, and he just came down a little bit on the back rail just kind of clipped it with his toe, and I popped off, and same thing, it had been really, really wet, so I retired him. So he got, I don't know, a quarter of the way around or something. And that was kind of the last thing that he did. I did some horse trials on him just for fun and experience, and then he went to a young rider and kind of educated her for a while.
But obviously you had a lot of fun with him too.
I did. He was a lovely horse and a great personality, and I think really, really loved his job. He loved to jump. He really, really did.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much for sharing those memories with us, Abigail, of Rome in 1998. It is quite a haul back in your memory banks, isn't it, when you have to revisit those events that were so long ago now.
It really is. I know. I can't believe I'm such that cliche of a person that I'm always saying, I can't believe how much time has passed. I can't believe how long ago it was. But it's fun. It's exciting. And watching the team prepare for the WEG this summer, it's great to kind of look back and think about it. So
yes,
Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, you'll always have those memories. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Abigail.
Great. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Kerry Milliken and Out and About were a member of the bronze medal winning team, and she also finished in 15th place individually. Well, Kerry, we're going to take a walk down memory lane today. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Let's talk about how it was for you going into those games and your preparation for the games. What do you remember of that?
It was not the best of preparations. I came back, I was over in England a lot from 95 to 97, and for the Open Europeans at Burley in 97, I'd been based over there and had prepped over there and done everything. And I came back after Burley in 97, and then I was prepping down in Southern Pines and was supposed to go to Kentucky with him. And was that the first year they made it like a big four-star thing? I think they were doing something big there. Anyhow, we're supposed to go to Kentucky. And the fox hunt came through when Audi was out in the field, which they weren't supposed to, and he got tearing around, and he wrenched a hind ankle, and it just filled up. It wasn't really even lame, but it was, you know, it was definitely something that was there, and we had the vets all look at it, and we thought, oh, just to be safe, and this was about a month out from Kentucky. So we thought, oh, we better not run him and aggravate it and make it really bad, because he danced all the other tunes. You know, he'd done Badminton, Burley, the Olympics, and Kentucky before, and Blenheim and all that stuff, and he'd always jump clear, and so we just thought, you know, it wasn't going to be right to send him to Kentucky. So we didn't do that, and I went over to England early, and because he didn't get out as much that spring, he was pretty wild, and I remember going to a couple of low-level prep things and like small OIs, and it was a little hairy. Anyhow, and it was September games, and so it wasn't the best of, September's 1st, 2nd, and 30th of September. Yeah, the end of September, beginning of October. So we did a couple of horse trials over there. But I didn't feel like I had the greatest preps because we'd missed all the cycle of a lot of the really good events. It was a long trek to get over there. That was one thing that I really remember, was the days of driving. And We drove from England all the way over the mountains, the French mountains, down into Italy. It was a long way. And I even remember Audi lying down. We had to get him up because we did stop at one place and let them sleep for a few hours. And we had to get him up, which was highly unusual. And it was an interesting drive trying to set all those team horses on these vans, and Jim Wolf and the whole group. We were exhausted by the time we got there. But it was a beautiful spot.
Well, it was a lovely venue, of course, at Pratone del Vivaro. Was that the first time you'd been there?
It was the first time I'd been to Pratone, yes. With 95, they had something. Was it the...
Open
at Pratone?
Championships. I think it was the...
Yeah, 95 and 97 they had the Open. That was a couple of years they did the Open Europeans. Did they have a... They didn't have any other world championships there, just Open Europeans.
No, if you go back to 1960, of course, that was the venue for the Olympic Games.
Okay, it was. Oh, interesting, huh?
So it was very hallowed turf. It was great turf, of course, on that volcanic ash, and also very hot. It's always hot in Pratone. But what were your impressions when you got to the venue and looked at the layout?
Oh, as you said, it was beautiful. They had that famous hill, and it was a bit of a ways up the hill, and there was some amazing. I mean, you think a couple of times you've jumped off a cliff into space. This had a new meaning to it. I mean, I remember this complex, and that was actually a little bit of a problem with me because he would go so fast down it. I mean, he was a complete roller coaster, and there was a bounce. It was a bounce combination with this huge. A related distance, and then this giant bounce thing, and then coming out of it, you literally, because it was way up high on a huge hill, and it had a tremendous drop afterwards, and you thought you were coming out of the Empire. Oh my gosh, it was such a huge drop, and he got smoking down the hill. I mean, I do actually talking about it now, it all just started to come back. And the next fence was quite an angle for then. They do such angles today, but this is when they were just sort of starting all these angles and offset things. And I remember you had to be quite accurate there. Now, I know one of the riders had stopped there. A lot of people were starting to have trouble. And it also was pouring with rain, which added to the slipperiness and the whole thing of it. It was a very angled line, so you had to be accurate. And he had smoked down the hill after that. Oh, my gosh, trying to get him back. That was also another trouble with him, was trying to get him back. You know, if you let him go too fast, it was hard to get it back, and he didn't really get tired very easily. But I do remember it was a beautiful venue, and the town was gorgeous. I mean, it was really, really super experience going to Italy. I actually had never been to Italy, and hadn't really thought that much. I always envisioned it hot and dry and everything. And of course, we had rain and it was very humid. It wasn't very cold, but it was the villages were beautiful. And where we stayed in Nemi, I think it was, people were lovely, and it was a wonderful feel there. I really fell in love with Italy.
How many days prior to the start of competition did you arrive?
You know, we didn't actually get there that early, even though despite the couple of days of driving, we didn't get there that early. Maybe on the Monday we got there, but it was because they didn't have a lot of jumps there. There wasn't any huge grandstands the way there are today, or it wasn't like down in Kentucky. And remember Kentucky a long time ago, they didn't have that mega grandstand thing that they have today. It was basically more like sort of badminton and Burleys, you know, just the temporary seating around. And you had a field, and they plunk up a stadium around it. So it wasn't, let me find my dressage pictures. And I was lucky I got to go in the morning.
And of course, it was all on grass. There was no weather to rain.
Well, actually, no, the show jump was on grass. It's lovely, big, beautiful grass field. But we had sort of a stone dusty dressage ring, and it had just the metal seating behind it.
Yes.
So
yes,
we did have that kind of footing, and it was, I went in the morning, and I remember getting totally drenched. I had a 6 a.m. school before, and I remember getting completely drenched that morning.
Well, of course, those were the days of the long format, too. And
oh, goodness, yeah.
You would have gone the long way, obviously, with that long format. You had a lot more to think about. And what were your impressions
when you saw
it all?
All the roads and tracks, and it was, although a number of times I'd been going to all these new places. I didn't get to go to places a lot of different times. I'd been to Bukalo, I'd been to Poland, you know, and the Burleys and the Badmintons. Once you did those, you got to kind of know your way around the sort of the basic layout of the roads and tracks. But you got over the years, you get better at figuring out where things are. And yeah, you had all your kilometer marks you had to do. You had all your minute markers on your steeplechase, your third, and the roads and track phase A was, tended to be like 20, 25 minutes. And then B was 4.5 minutes for these four star, these CCIO competitions, 4.5 minutes steeplechase, and then 50 minutes of phase C. That's a lot of kilometer markers to go remember. And then you had a 13-minute cross-country course. And so you had to know your 13. I mean, I had pages of things, you know, where each minute marker was and where is this compulsory flag and that, which I actually really liked because it really gave me, I really loved having a lot to think about. And I actually have it here.
And then, of course, you would have all your checkpoints strapped to your arm,
yeah.
Would you?
Yep. Let's see. Actually, here, I've got the sheet here. Phase A was almost 6 kilometers. B was, 4.5 minutes. It was 3,105. Phase C was 10,000 meters, and that was, 48 minutes. And phase D was 13.5. Holy Jesus. 13 minutes, 26 seconds.
That was very different in those days. And, of course, as you say, it did rain as well. That would have affected the footing a little bit.
It was very interesting because it poured at there and it poured at badminton the next year. And that really started to get, and then what other? Oh, it also was tough conditions at one of those events before. I think in 97 at Burley, I didn't go in the rain, but it was fairly slippery and wet. Anyway, there were 3 years. There was and like Reddy Petty, who had won the Olympics in 96. And then he won here, I believe. Was it Teddy that won?
Yes, he won.
Yeah, and then, but he went in the mud, and you could see the horse a little bit, and then in 99, we were all at badminton again, and it was like this year. I mean, I went out in the most unbelievable rain, and it had been pouring with rain. I mean, it was just like this year, and Teddy didn't, and my feeling was that it was a cumulative effect of doing enough major hard competitions in off conditions, in difficult conditions. And Teddy kind of spit it out, and he never really came back after badminton 99. I kind of was like, they can do just so much in heavy, hard conditions again and again. But I remember the pouring rain there and the pouring rain the next year. I had a lot of that.
So, on the steeplechase.
It was difficult there. Karen's horse, Prince Panache, had a heart condition or something happened to him on the steeplechase. I mean, we actually had quite a difficult time. And I had my watch. The one time I was a couple of seconds over on the steeplechase. And, we're all taught you're supposed to sort of be in there on time. Because there was such a long way to go, you were not supposed to go 30 seconds under on anything. It was stupid to do. And Jack LaGolf also really browbeat that into us that, why waste your horse? You're supposed to be economical and use what you've got. And something happened to my watch. I don't know to this day what it was, whether it got double clicked or he clicked it again over a fence. But all of a sudden I look at like the halfway or something and it's not moving. And trying to guess your way around without using your horse up in the mud and going too fast. And so I remember taking enormous amounts of grief for it. There were several things that came back from coaching things that were really difficult about that event, and I understand it, but it was quite hard. And the show jumping, the other thing that was really tough about that was the show jumping. We had to, you always have to jump clear. And Audi was tricky on the 3 days. He was famous for a rail, and he just didn't really respect those as much. He was so dynamic over the cross country. He was just like, this is really that important. So he was very hard to get to jump clear. And especially if he got going at all quick, he would just slip and hollow out from underneath you. Because like so many thoroughbreds and like Donna, they can have a tendency to jump flat, especially after the cross country. And he could flip and change inside out so quickly in front of the fence. And so and this happens with eventers. You see event riders, they tend to want to get time faults in the show jumping. Because of the galloping the way our horses gallop cross country, they tend to, shift ways they jump. Because they don't all put this nice, beautiful, round bascule in the cross country. And you're not going to probably make the time doing that. And so it's hard to get them to jump clean and round the next day. And If I went, I remember discussing with Mark, there was a turn to an oxer, and we could either go a little inside it or take just a little bit and go around it. And we talked about it. I said, you know, I may get a time fault, but is that better than slicing it and having a rail or having him get rattled and then take another rail? And I remember we'd all discussed it. No, you know, let's have him jump clear. And I did go the route that we had planned, and he jumped clear. But he did have one time fault. And I remember getting, like, a lot of grief for it. And I'm like, hang on a second. We discussed this. Did I want to go around or did I want to slice it? And it, but those things, but the team, I think, one point made an enormous amount of difference for us. And it does, these team competitions do get to that. It was a difficult competition because we were so close against, you know, we were in fourth at that point or something. And I remember Mark, I didn't want to be adding up the scores. All I wanted to do was the best job that I could and not try and pay attention to the scores and figure, let the coach do that. I've got to do my job, which is as good as I can do. And just freaking out about points isn't really going to help me. So I do know that it was really tight. And they said, oh, your one point made the difference. And, you know, things happen at competition. We all can't be perfect.
Well, things did shake up a different way in the end. As you say, the team actually finished fourth outside the medals with a score of 186.15, just behind Great Britain, who finished on a score of 184.96. However, on that team, the British team, was Polly Phillips and Coral Cove. Do you want to take the story from there?
Yes, but that whole Polly thing was quite a sad story. Anyhow, she had that wonderful horse, and apparently she drug tested positive, and so England lost their placement, and we got the bronze. And of course, that was a huge. Naturally, a bunch of her team members were hugely upset about it, and because you know you're counting as a team. It's not an individual competition. I mean, even though there are the individuals at the top, it really is all about the team score and the team medals. And she, you know, she really hurt her team. And I don't know, nobody wanted to get involved in the ins and outs of who or how the horse was, what sort of drugs, and I never really wanted to know that. All I know is that they had a positive, and that meant that their score was tossed out, and that meant that we moved up into, third placing. And you know, people are like, oh, but the what ifs, and I'm like, you know, if I had been able to do that to my horse, I probably could have done better too. So it all these, if you get a drug positive, you get a drug positive, and that's you know, there's a reason why you're tested. So it was, but it was dicey. Naturally, a number of the British riders were quite really upset about it, and some of them, it was a difficult time, but I do think that we earned it. And the cross country with the mud, I remember I was told to go a bunch of long ways, and that was frustrating for me because it wasn't my nature, and I did get some time faults on cross country that I probably wouldn't have normally, but you know, you got to do what you got to do for team things. And you know, I guess I was always like that. You look back and you think, gosh, you know, I should have done this or I could have done that, but it's always like that. It's always, there's always something you could do better.
Do you remember?
So we ended up having three finishes on the team.
Yeah, you did. David O'Connor, of course, with Gilt Edge, and Bruce Davidson with Heyday, and yourself. Do you remember, though, at what point that you were notified that you would actually won the team bronze medal? Because the GBA
it was after. Oh, it was after the competition, and it was a little bit after the competition. Though I can't remember why, we kind of thought we knew it had gone on. I don't know whether there were rumblings going on, but, you know, you hear things. Gosh, I pulled out the album, and I haven't looked at this in years because I never really went back and looked at stuff. He was a cool horse. There's some really cool shots here. He was a really, really lovely, is still a
so
maniac.
So what was your biggest takeaway then, Kerry, from those games?
Oh boy, I rarely went long way. My biggest thing would be really paying it. Don't ever give up, even though you have to go the long way. Every second's going to count, and you know, those time falls, and it was hock deep in mud, and I suppose I could have gone faster at certain places, but it was a little tough with these crazy long ways that I had to go because we'd lost Prince Panache, and that was a huge thing to lose. We were down to only three horses, and so all of them had to trot up the next day too. So we were kind of under the gun. As I said, the whole team thing changes it when you only have four on a team. You just got to keep pushing and just try to think where you can shave anything off. The cross country, I did jump clear on the show jumping, and he had a 40-something on the dressage, which was really good for them and good for him. And across country, the disappointment was I had some time faults, and it was because I went long ways, and I should have been able to be better at compensating and picking that up in between. You know, you wish, that's why it's great to be able to stay in this sport and do it more and more, because you learn each competition you do, you learn more, and you'd be a little savvier the next time. You just hope that it's a positive enough experience that you're willing to give it all that it takes. But I think because we were so close to it, that the ridicule that we took afterwards was cut pretty deep, and I thought it was a teeny bit unfair, because a lot of the things I had been discussed and planned to do that way, and I did what we discussed. So I think that it was a little bit difficult, the things we took, because we thought we'd lost the bronze by such a close margin.
And now you have another medal to add to your
I got a Pan Am gold and a World Championship medal and an Olympic medal, so it wasn't so bad.
Terrific. Well, thanks for joining us, Kerry, to take a look down there. Memory lane again at those 1998 World Equestrian Games in Rome.
Oh, thanks. That was fun pulling out the album, and it did make me think about all the crazy jumps they had out there.
And we'll be talking to more riders who will share their memories of previous World Equestrian Games as we continue our countdown to this year's games. And just to remind you that you can download these episodes on iTunes, where you can subscribe to the podcast. And you can also listen to them on podcast apps. Just go to the App Store and find a podcast app, and they will update automatically on your smartphone. Until the next time, enjoy your eventing.